Hello, Weekside Podcast listeners. This is Jenny Rentis. I'm here with Connor Orr. We thought we'd mix things up a little bit this week. We tried to put a call out on Instagram for questions this morning. Connor pulled some Spice Girl lyrics into a little spicy Instagram post. Didn't turn up a lot of questions, but it made us think that in future weeks, we'd love to hear from you. We can work in a Q&A type thing, perhaps to our Tuesday show. So in the future, we have a Gmail address. If you would like to write in, it's weeksidepod@gmail.com. That's weeksidepod@gmail.com. But for this week, since we don't have questions yet, we are going to lean into the Gamblor character. That's Gamblor, because our favorite thing to do on the show is make Orr puns. Connor has even showed up in costume to record today's show, which we, again, we'll have to post a photo of later because this is truly a sight to behold. So I'm just going to turn it over to the Gamblor because we're going to discuss some bets for the upcoming 2020 season, but Connor has it all down. He's got the list. He's got the explanation. He's ready to go.
Okay. So this is just for our viewers who are listeners who we're going to talk about money line betting. So this is from William Hill Gambling Service. Shout out to our former SI colleague, Max Meyer, who is over at William Hill. We miss you, buddy. A money line bet, just so everyone knows sort of the basics of it. Like, for example, a plus 200, there's a plus and a minus, right, on every bet, a yes or a no, basically. The plus would mean, so let's say it's plus 200. That would mean that you would make $200 if you bet $100 and were correct. But if it's minus 200, then that means you would need to bet $200 to win $100, if that makes sense. So we're not really going to get into the mechanics of that, but we're throwing that around, and I know some people aren't hardened gambling types. I'm not really. I used to bet on horse racing. I used to like horse racing. That was fun. But, you know, anyway, that's just what we're going to do. So, Jenny, I'm going to throw a couple things at you. Again, totally random. There's really not a specific order, but I looked at all of William Hill's offerings right now and picked out some of the things that I thought were most interesting to discuss. So let's get to it. But first, what do you think of the Gamblor's hat? Is this like, do you think it fits the character?
Absolutely. Well, it's a look. I noticed you removed the sunglasses to really focus on your pad of paper, but I think with the Kangol and the sunglasses, it's really a character that's just kind of sprung up. You know, in the last week on the Week Side, we've really come up with this Gamblor character, and I think it's going to be with us for a long time, Connor.
Oh, that's good to hear. Okay, so the first one is the Atlanta Falcons to make the playoffs, and that's yes at plus 240 and no at minus 300. So overwhelmingly sort of favoring the fact that the Falcons won't make the playoffs. But that's interesting to me, so we'll start there. I don't know. I mean, I think that there's a little bit of value to be had right there.
I do, too. I kind of like the Falcons to be in the playoff mix. I'm assuming this is because, you know, you've got the Drew Brees-led Saints and the arrival of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. But, you know, I think the Falcons are always in the mix. They had a bumpy season last year, but really kind of came together down the stretch, saved Dan Quinn's job, and it seems like he's embraced this offseason with a fresh approach and has been really focusing on connecting with his players. And I could see them making the playoffs, Connor. I kind of like that too.
Yeah, I do too. So along those lines, and I don't want to influence you in any way, but the other division or the other to make the playoffs one that I picked out that I thought was pretty interesting was Indianapolis Colts. Yes, minus 160, no, plus 140. So everybody kind of thinking that the Indianapolis Colts are going to make the playoffs because of Phillip Rivers. But I don't know. I thought that was sort of an interesting one that people might be able to capitalize on.
I'm kind of down on the Colts this year.
Me too.
I mean, I think they have connections with Rivers and they went for him and they're trying to figure out their post Andrew Luck quarterback plan. So this was kind of a stopgap measure, but I think Rivers' play really declined last season. And maybe they're counting on the offensive line being stronger in Indianapolis for him to be able to kind of function a little bit better than he did with the Chargers last year. But I don't see them as a playoff team, Connor.
I don't either. You know, I just think that it's I don't know what Phillip Rivers is right now. And granted, it's a better offensive line, probably a wash in terms of the receiver talent that he switches from, maybe slightly more of a comfort zone in the offense. But that division is still very good. It's gotten better, I think, since last season. And I don't know. I'm just not totally high on the Colts. So I think that was an interesting one.
Yeah, that was a good selection. Those are two good discussion points, Connor. I like what you're doing here.
Yeah, basically just seeing if you agree with me.
I mean, the good part is, like, there's months until we'll actually know any of these things. So
exactly.
People will have forgotten probably what we're saying right now.
That's right. So the next one I thought was kind of fascinating was comeback player of the year. And now there are dozens of options for comeback player of the year. But I'm curious, where would your head be at right now? And do you want me to list a few of them and just kind of see what you think? Or do you want to list one and see where they are on the list?
Let's hear a couple names, Connor.
Okay, so the top, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. So these are the top 8 players for comeback player of the year in order. Number 1 is Rob Gronkowski. Number 2 is Ben Roethlisberger. 3 is J.J. Watt. 4 is Matt Stafford. 5 is A.J. Green. 6, Cam Newton. 7, Alex Smith. And 8, Nick Foles. So I think that's an interesting crop of players at the top of comeback player of the year.
I'm just going to venture a guess and say that none of those 8 win it.
I don't think so either.
Like, I don't think those are great picks.
No, when I looked at the list at first, I was like, what? Especially Rob Gronkowski. I can't imagine very many tight ends have ever won comeback player of the year. Ben Roethlisberger feels safe to me, but who knows? I don't know, you know, how much better that offense is going to be. AJ Green is going to be playing with a rookie wide receiver. That offense, I think, is going to have a hard time getting going. Not a lot of great options there. Maybe Nick Foles, because all Nick Foles does is win. So maybe that was, you know, something there.
I think the comeback player of the year is always a hard one because generally the kind of appeal of that is it's someone that you don't expect. And certainly there are cases where there's a quarterback coming off a season-ending injury. So I understand that Roethlisberger among that list would probably be among the more likely. But a lot of times this comes out of nowhere, right? Like we saw Darren Waller have this great story last year, you know, battled through addiction and came back and was a great player for the Raiders. And so I think there's, you know, Tannehill was obviously in the mix for the comeback player of the year last year. Who actually won it, Connor? I think I voted for Waller, but I don't remember who actually won last year. But those were some of the names that were being considered. And you wouldn't have thought about Darren Waller or Ryan Tannehill at this point last year.
Yeah, no, exactly. And now I need to know who won 2019 NFL comeback player of the year. Oh, Ryan Tannehill won comeback player of the year.
Okay.
So the next group here is this is the second page of the odds, and they are by far my favorite because there's just some wild names on this list. Nick Foles leaves off at plus 1200, and then everything sort of dovetails from here. So the next names on the list are Aldon Smith, which is kind of interesting. Aldon Smith comes. That's one that's sort of in line with what you said. Someone that, you know, we don't expect. But then it just sort of really gets nuts from here. Miles Garrett. I guess I don't know what you're coming back from. Is, you know, bludgeoning someone with your helmet is not really like a story we can all get behind.
Yeah, that would be really tough to collect votes for him, I would say.
And then at the same, they're both plus 2500 Antonio Brown, which, like, I don't think anybody is getting behind that as a feel good comeback story. And then from there, DeSean Jackson, Baker Mayfield, Andy Dalton, Bradley Chubb, Jared Goff, David Johnson, Joe Flacco, and then Juwan James at plus 5,000. Like, that's
wow.
Like, that's like really interesting. Now, here's kind of a spicy one. The last one that you can get at plus 10,000. So you bet $100 to win 10,000. Derwin James from the Chargers.
Oh, what? Wow. Now that's good because,
see?
That's really good. What if he came back to be like defensive player of the year, like change the Chargers' fortunes? Ooh,
yes.
I like
and
that one.
And totally capable of doing that.
Absolutely. Like, was such a force the year before, and they obviously missed him last season. So, okay. I could get behind that.
According to William Hill, he is less likely to win comeback player of the year than Josh Rosen. Like, I just, again, and Josh Rosen would be a wonderful feel-good story. I would be thrilled if he found a place in the NFL where he could prove all the doubters wrong. But, like, Derwin James is a good value pick there. It's like, if I'm a gambler and, you know, which I am, you know, gambler, you know, a lot of what they do is they look at these things for inefficiencies, and they don't care if they lose a lot, and so they throw these $100 or whatever, however many dollar bets around, looking for inefficiencies. Derwin James, to me, is a big one. Like, the odds on that are fantastic.
Yeah. Well, at least you play a gambler on this podcast, Connor. You might not be one, but, you know, you're playing the role well.
That's right. Well, thank you. So the next one is offensive rookie of the year, and you know, I think that the safe bet is typically always going to be Joe Burrow. You know, I think that's where a lot of the momentum is going, but from there the list, I think it's really interesting. But first I'll ask, anyone that you kind of have your eye on beyond Joe Burrow as a rookie of the year type player?
Well, who are the next few on the list, Connor?
So the next one on the list is really interesting to me, and a name that I actually really loved, and I'm kind of bummed that it's already that high. He's already that high up on the list, and that's Clyde Edwards-Helaire from the Chiefs is the number two. You know, I think that everybody's obviously going to be bullish on the Chiefs there, and now that Andy Reid has spent a first-round pick on a running back, I think everybody's kind of going to be, you know, on his case this year as a potential, you know, person who's going to pile on the statistics, but I don't know. So that one was really interesting to me. I really liked I liked Clyde Edwards-Helaire.
Well, I think that makes sense because you have to think about who is kind of able to slot in, and I think that would be the question mark with some of the receivers, right? Because receivers often a position where rookies have trouble contributing immediately, or it's you know, the history of that position has been that it takes a little bit longer. So Jerry Jeudy and CeeDee Lamb and Henry Ruggs might not be as high up on the list, whereas like Edwards-Helaire, you figure, okay, he's plugging into a great offense. You know, it's a position where sometimes you see running backs get delayed being on the field because of like third down pass protections or such. But you figure if anyone can plug in a player into his offense quickly, it would be Andy Reid. So I think that makes sense. I mean, obviously there's, you know, Tua, I'm sure, is not far behind on the list.
Yeah, so I can go down the next few names if that. So after Edwards-Helaire, Tua is next. And then we have Jonathan Taylor, Henry Ruggs, CeeDee Lamb, Jerry Jeudy, DeAndre Swift, Cam Akers, and then all the way after that, Justin Herbert at plus 2,000. So,
okay.
You know, I was like, not bullish on Justin Herbert, but I wonder what makes people that much more confident in Tua given the injury issues. I don't know. I think I would maybe side a little bit more with Justin Herbert there.
Yeah, that's actually why I asked you who the second one on the list was rather than venture a guess. But I was curious how far Tua was behind Burrow. I agree with you, Connor. I would say that they have equal chances. I mean, I think people are maybe saying, okay, well, the Chargers like Tyrod as a bridge guy, and they do. And, you know, this is a year when you figure a bridge quarterback would have a better chance of playing longer than a rookie because they're going to have less time to get acclimated, but you never know. And I think the conversation around Tua has always kind of been like, it would be good if he had some time to make sure he's fully recovered from the injury. So I am surprised there's that much of a gap between the two of them.
You know what one I kind of sneaky love?
I just had a thought of one too, and I'm curious if it's the same.
Okay, so all the way at the bottom. These are in the plus 10,000 range. So there's two of them here that I kind of like, but the biggest one, Jacob Eason at 10,000 plus 10,000. So bet 100 to win 10,000. You don't know what's going to happen with Philip Rivers. It's a weird season. And I'm not wishing this upon anybody, but God forbid an injury happens. He steps in. That's a quarterback friendly system. Frank Reich. And even though we're down on the Colts, like, he performs above expectation. I don't know. That's kind of a fun one, you know?
Oh, that's a good one. I like it. I wasn't going quite that far down, but Jalen Reagor is one that kind of popped out at me just because there's such a dire need there for the Eagles.
I like that pick. And so the other reason I like it so much, and we can plug the Sports Illustrated Fantasy football issues, I have him as my offensive rookie of the year, Jalen.
Oh,
Reagor,
wow.
As well.
I didn't even know that. See? Really just in synergy on the show, Connor.
God, great minds. But he's at plus 2,200. So I think we're in good shape here. We're just minting money for the listeners of the Weak Side Pod right now. Good for them. Good for you guys that you're sticking with us. We're recording this on Memorial Day. It's going to be kind of a sneaky little episode. And then all of a sudden, you know, at the end of the season, we're going to be hearing from the two or three really loyal listeners who are going to be picking out their yachts and their vacation homes. So good for you guys. I'm very happy for all of you. So.
I mean, or not. Just to be clear, we are making no promises here. We are doing this largely for fun.
Yes. Don't listen to anything we say. safe advice for everybody. The next one is a fun one too, and that is regular season MVP. You know, there's the obvious ones here at the top of the list. Patrick Mahomes, Lamar Jackson, Russell Wilson are the top three. Mm-hmm. But then Deshaun Watson is four. That's one that would scare me a little bit. And that has nothing to do with Deshaun Watson. I just think that the Texans are going to take a step back, and they also removed his best offensive weapon from the equation. I think that that's a trouble spot. And then Dak Prescott, Tom Brady, Drew Brees, Kyler Murray, Carson Wentz, Aaron Rodgers, the first non-quarterback on the list, Saquon Barkley at plus 3,000. Josh Allen is in the mix here. And then all the way back down at the bottom of the list at plus 5,000, you get Jared Stidham, which I think is an interesting one. Drew Locke at plus 6,600. Same as Ryan Tannehill and Cam Newton. And then, you know, even past that, beyond that, some interesting sort of value ones that I would pick. Jared Goff at plus 10,000. Like, just sitting there. And, you know, you have Sean McVay as a head coach. You have the offseason where, you know, you guys had the chance to work together. There wasn't a coaching change. I don't know. I think there might be some value to be had there.
One thing that stood out to me is Kyler Murray's pretty high.
I know. You know, it's a bummer because I was super froggy about the Cardinals, and now it seems like everybody is on the Cardinals, which means that they're going to be bad, and so I'm going to have to change the team. You know, you just like to have a team that nobody else likes but you, and maybe I should just, you know, this is really a Chargers forward pod this offseason. We're very all in on the Chargers as well, but I think people are creeping on that one too a little bit, you know?
Yeah. Oh, are they? Okay. I haven't heard that as much, but I definitely have heard the Cardinals buzz. Did you say that Kyler Murray has the same odds as Wentz and Rodgers, or?
Better.
Better. Okay.
So
wow.
Rodgers is at plus 2,500. Kyler Murray is only at plus 2,000.
Okay.
So he has better odds than Wentz, Rodgers, Saquon Barkley, Matt Ryan, Jimmy Garoppolo, Christian McCaffrey, Josh Allen, Philip Rivers, Ben Roethlisberger, Ezekiel Elliott, Derek Carr, Matt Stafford. So I very bullish the gamblers on Kyler Murray.
Yeah, that's a little surprising to me. Yeah, that's higher ranking than I would have expected.
And some of the lonely guys there at the bottom of the list that I don't think you can ignore. Ryan Fitzpatrick at plus 15,000. I think that just screams value for me, Jenny. The beard, he could lead the Dolphins in a wide open AFC. He's back together with Chan Gailey. Remember how good they were in Buffalo when we were covering the Jets those years? I don't know. Look out. He's just hanging out back there waiting to make you some money.
If it was a week 8 MVP, then yes. But if it's a full season MVP, although who knows? Maybe the NFL, right. Maybe they don't play a full season. So maybe maybe this is the year.
Come on. You know, what are you waiting for, everybody? Let's go. Let's go. Think outside the box. Where's Jeopardy James? He should be, we should have had him on the podcast.
Oh, yeah. That's okay. I feel confident in the hands of the gambler this week, so.
The next one, which I think are kind of fun, are Joe Burrow specific odds. And they did one for Joe Burrow and they did one for Tua. And so I picked out one in particular. And that is do the odds that Joe Burrow would set the rookie interception record, which is 28, set by our favorite Peyton Manning. And it's plus 800, so, I don't think there's a lot of confidence in that. But I think that's an interesting discussion point. I don't think it's a guarantee that he comes in and lights the world on fire. He is a player that is not afraid to make these throws and probably won't change about his game at all in the NFL. So I don't know. I think that's an interesting one.
I think that record is always going to be a hard one to break. So, I don't know that I see Burrow breaking that record this year, Connor.
It would take a Jameis Winstein effort on his part, but I think that there's a lot riding on this season for the Bengals, for Burrow, for Zach Taylor. You just sort of wonder how that's all going to play out. It's so funny. I mean, in any other offseason, I think we would be so dialed in on the plan for Burrow and what this offense is going to look like, how similar it's going to be to what he was used to at LSU. But, you know, with everything going on, it's like you have a hard time kind of zeroing in on all these percolating storylines. But I think that I'm fascinated to see what happens with him. I mean, this could be a breakout season for him. I don't know.
Yeah, I think if you look at somebody who would throw the rookie interception record, it would be somebody that has a lot of confidence to be passing a ton. Burrow does have a lot of confidence, but I think he only had 6 interceptions in the 2019 season. Obviously, lots of differences from college football to the pros, but I don't know that he would be my pick for the guy to do it.
Yeah, I think that would be interesting. Now, Tua, right, is, the same thing here, but I'm gonna throw at you two different Tua prop bets and see what you think about these. So over or under 3,300 passing yards for the season. What do you think about that one?
Under.
Me too. I don't think we're gonna see him until the bye week, after the bye week, if that, right? I mean, and we say this every year, and I know our colleague Albert Breer keeps the list of, you know, the teams who say that we hope this guy isn't going to play this year and how soon into the season the rookie quarterback always ends up playing. But with both the Chargers and the Dolphins, I would not be surprised if we don't see these guys for a long time.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's where when you have these prop bets for the rookies, it's kind of like it's got to be a quarterback. Like, for instance, for the rookie interception record, it's got to be someone that will play right away, which is why Joe Burrow would be in the conversation to possibly break the rookie interception record. But I agree with you. I think it'll be Tua and Herbert, I think, will sit for a bit. And so I think that makes any of these rookie records difficult to break.
Would that mean that you're equally as down on the over under 20 touchdowns? I'm definitely a way under on that one, too, right?
Definitely an under, yep.
Because think about how, you know, as crazy as it is, you know, Baker Mayfield's big rookie season that we were all gushing about, I think was like 26 or 27 touchdowns. So it would have to come within sniffing distance of that. And while Baker didn't play the entire season either, I don't know. I mean, that's a lot, I think, to put on someone like Tua, especially when we don't know what his health situation looks like, when he's actually going to come out there and start playing. So I don't know. I'm a little down on that.
Yeah, that seems to be set kind of high.
I think so, too. So this is a fun guessing game. I'm going to ask you to give me the four, or we can four or five. I'll accept any of the five. Five worst Super Bowl odds for any team in the NFL. Who are the teams that you think are at the very bottom of the odds list for Super Bowl winners in 2020.
Okay. Washington.
Yes.
Detroit.
Not in the bottom four, but they're in the bottom like seven.
Okay. Cincinnati.
Yes.
Jets.
Jets are bottom one, two, three, four. They're five. They're right outside the bottom five.
Okay. I'm probably missing someone super obvious, Connor.
There's a team that you are perpetually always down on that you have not named yet, and I'm kind of surprised that you haven't listed them yet.
You know, it's so hard when you have to just come up with, like, you know what I mean? Like,
Yeah.
You know, like, when I do these things, usually I have to go division by division because it's easy just to simply forget someone. A team that I'm perpetually down on. Wow. Mm-hmm.
And every time that I remember several times over the course of the pod, I have listed this team as maybe a potential sleeper or a team that I'm high on when no one else is high on, and I always and you're always right about it, but you always give it the big swat, and I've noticed that over time. So this is one that I'm surprised that you haven't named immediately.
Okay. I'm gonna just go through some of the divisions in my mind.
It's a team in the South.
The NFC South or the AFC South?
I was just going to say the southern part of the United States.
Oh, the southern part of the United States. Okay.
Southeastern.
Oh, the Jaguars.
Yes. Yeah.
Sorry. That was an obvious one. Really embarrassing. It took me so long to get there. Okay. So we've got Jaguars. We've got Washington.
Bengals.
And we've got Bengals. Okay.
And then you got one more. I would give you credit for Jets because the Jets were the fifth lowest, but there is one more, and this one kind of surprised me a little bit. But I
Giants?
Guess, no.
Oh, mm-hmm. Not the Giants. Okay.
Another. It's an animal similar to a jaguar. How about that?
Is this? I didn't watch Tiger King, so I'm a little bit. Panthers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
So
yeah.
Four worst chances to win the Super Bowl: Panthers, Jaguars, Washington, and Cincinnati. In that order, Cincinnati.
So a lot of cats, a lot of big cats.
Ooh, yeah.
Three out of the four, and Washington would be great if they changed their mascot to a big cat. So we're all hoping that would happen. So maybe there's another big cat out there that they could be like, I don't know, a snow leopard or something. Is that too Ooh. Close to a jaguar? Probably.
No, and you know what? The uniform possibilities there would really be something. You know, because the leopard brings the spots into the equation. You know, you could do some nice things there, and you could do sort of a majestic. Because leopards aren't, snow leopards are white, but then they get into the off-white, they like ivory. You could really, you could play with it, you know?
Great. Okay. Good. We'll suggest it.
Solving all the league's problems one at a time. So the last two that I wanted to do, division favorites, and I just figure we'll talk about these. You know, I think that we've already sort of gotten into one in the AFC, and we'll circle back there in a second. But I'll give you the NFC division favorites, which are Dallas, Green Bay, New Orleans, San Francisco. I envision a world where none of them are the division winners, actually.
Okay, this is interesting. So you're thinking
Philadelphia in the
NFC.
Yeah,
Philadelphia.
Minnesota in the north. Maybe Tampa Bay or Atlanta in the south. And then in the West, I mean, that division is wide open. I mean, Seattle, if you're feeling that good about the Cardinals, the Rams, I mean, that division is wide, wide, wide open.
Division's wide open, yeah. I would say of those four, the Saints might be the most likely. And I would put the Packers next. I mean, the Vikings had a lot of losses this offseason. I think they're kind of trying to rebuild a little bit key spots of their roster, namely their defense. True. So I'm a little bit unsure of how they fit in this year. I kind of like Dallas, but yeah, I generally would lean Philly in that division.
I would too. I think they're a better coach team. I think Carson Wentz is going to have a good season. I don't know. Who knows? Maybe, you know, it's weird. I went for a run the other day and I saw someone in all of the gear. Like, you know how every coach kind of has the thing that they wear is like their thing, you know? And someone was wearing the entire Joe Judge getup. Like the,
what?
Like head to toe, like the hat that he was wearing, the kind of the shirt thing that he wears. And I was like, holy crap. And he looked like him too. And I thought that Joe Judge moved into my neighborhood, which would have been exciting, but it was not Joe Judge. I stopped and I like, which one, it must have been weird for that guy who was walking his dog. And he had a golden retriever like Joe Judge.
But, oh, wow. You could have had socially distanced hangouts around the lake with him.
Yeah. Unfortunately, I don't think that, you know. Maybe, you know, I don't know. I don't need to know where he lives, but it would have been, you know, would have been cool. So AFC division winners, Kansas City, Indianapolis, Baltimore, and New England in the East. So I think that a lot of these could be up for debate, too. I have New England winning the AFC East again. I don't feel like there's a reason to bet against them. I think I didn't pick Baltimore when we talked about this before, just to kind of try to throw a little bit of a dissenting opinion in there. But I don't think we love Indianapolis there either, you know?
I would say of the four, Indy is the one I like the least, definitely.
Yeah, I would say picking against Kansas City, probably you're trying to get too cute there. I don't see anybody really there that's fully ready to take over. Maybe the Chargers could make a run. But I don't know. I don't love Indy. I don't know.
I'm surprised that they're the favorites there.
Me too.
Because they've got a change at the quarterback position. They have both the Titans and the Texans made the playoffs last year. So I guess odds makers are really on board with the gamblers' take that it'll be hard for Derrick Henry to follow up last season's performance, and thus the Titans will fall off a little bit. And then I guess the loss of DeAndre Hopkins with the Texans, but they still have Deshaun Watson. So, yeah, I'm not liking the Colts there.
Yeah,
the other ones sound pretty good.
Yeah, I don't know. It's going to be weird. I mean, betting on the NFL this year is probably going to be weird no matter what.
Right,
you know?
Right. So, like, what happens if you place bets now, but then there isn't a season?
I mean,
it looks like we're heading toward a season. I just want to say that, but I'm just curious.
You can just get your money back.
Okay, yeah.
But I would encourage anybody to use a reputable online gambling site, you know, like our buddy Max Meyer over at William Hill. And... you know, don't do the seedy offshore bank account bookie deal, because then, you know, who knows? You know, bet responsibly is all we're trying to say.
Yeah, yeah, definitely follow the gambler's guidelines for responsible betting.
What's the last time have you ever bet on anything?
I think I one time won like $30 at a slot machine in New Orleans.
Nice.
I think I played some low stakes poker games with friends in college, my college newspaper friends. There was like a weekly poker game going.
You were in college right during the big Texas Hold'em boom, right?
That was right.
Yeah.
Yes. That was exactly the time. And I have been to a few racetracks, but I don't recall ever betting there.
I like betting on horse racing, but I only know one kind of bet. It's like you say whatever the horse's name that you like, and then you say across the board. So I guess that means you're either betting for it to finish in first, second, or third. And so that's always fun. But like, I'm told that's not the best way to do it, but somebody was trying to explain it to me like right before the Belmont Stakes, and they're like, just do this. And so that's what I do. Yeah.
Okay. I do enjoy going to horse race. I went to the Derby one year and that to cover it. And that was, I was covering because Chris Mara of the Giants was a part owner with Starlight Racing. And he did double duty there, which I feel like I mentioned recently on another pod. So I'm probably just repeating the same thing over and over again. But that was a cool experience, making the walk and seeing the whole crowd at the Derby. I mean, it's the amount of people there. Which in this COVID era is like kind of hard to fathom, mm-hmm. but it's a very different like feeling than a stadium, because it's like this broad grandstand, right? So it's there's something different about the impact that that size of the crowd makes. But yeah, of course, now any of those crowds feel overwhelming and anxiety ridden. So it's kind of different to look back on that these days.
The last time I went to the Belmont, we went for the triple crown, whoever the last horse to win the triple crown was.
Justify?
Maybe. We saw it, whatever it was. But I don't remember that, because we were in the, like, in the outfield or whatever. We were just kind of hanging out and watching it on TV from there when we were sitting near the betting tents. But the big story from that day was that I tried to sneak in a 2-liter bottle of Yellowtail Merlot for my wife in a you know, those Eddie Bauer soccer mom chairs. And I tried to.
Wow.
Yeah. So I shoved it underneath the, in between the legs of the chair, because I figured there's no way that they're going to see it's a chair bag and they're not going to, you know, bang us for that. Nope. Stripped the entire chair bag down, confiscated our Yellowtail Merlot. I'm told by wine experts that was a bad year for mass produced Australian wines anyway. So it's not like we missed out on a whole lot, but we did get caught with some confiscated Merlot at the racetrack.
I was going to say, Connor, if you had to pick a bottle of wine that got confiscated and that you wouldn't mind losing, Yellowtail Merlot is not a bad one to have to surrender, I would say. But that's cool. You got, I mean, to see the Triple Crown, but that was the highlight of the day. Your enduring memory is not seeing the Triple Crown winner, but it is having your Merlot seized.
Yeah. Speaking of which, any good booze recommendations for the next leg of the pandemic? Have you drank anything or bought anything good recently?
No, I mean, I fell victim to that Instagram ad for the, like, Naked Wines box or whatever. So, you know, I did the little promotion where you get a box of 12 for, like, what amounts to $100 with all the thing. And then you have to immediately have to cancel so you don't pay the monthly fee that would, you know, accrue 30 days from then. But I did that. So I got it like a month and a half ago, and I'm like on the second bottle. I don't drink like half a glass with dinner. I'm a very like slow drinker. So
is that like the wine with no preservatives or whatever?
You know, Connor, I think it's a program that like, I don't know that the wines are different, but I think the idea is it's called Naked Wines because I think they like cut out all of the like middlemen with like mass produced wineries. So I think that they like tried to invest in like up and coming wineries. I think that's the whole shtick, but I don't know. How about you? Anything good on the docket?
I got a bottle of Bordeaux that I'm kind of interested in cracking, and so maybe I'll do that one of these days. And then just load it up on the boxed wine, Jenny. I mean, that's really what this is the time and the place for it. I've done all of our local, we have 3 breweries that deliver, and I've done pandemic orders from all of them to help them out, keep them in business. But at the end of the day, it's all about, you know, savings, finance, and there's not a better deal in drinking than the boxed wine. So
that's good. I think we can all get behind that. Some pandemic savings, you know.
That's right. Yeah,
so it makes a lot of sense.
Well, we hope we made you guys some money. We hope that you had a great Memorial Day weekend. We hope you were safe and not grinding with a bunch of strangers in the Lake of the Ozarks. Oh my goodness, seeing that video gave me shivers down my spine. Did you see that?
I did, Connor. That was quite the sight.
Yeah.
Not somewhere we would want to be anytime, but especially now.
No. So hopefully you had a safe, social distanced Memorial Day weekend. You got to maybe see some friends and have a good time. And yeah, stick with us. We'll be back for our Thursday episode as usual.
Yeah. Thanks for putting this together. It's a good little slice of entertainment for people to enjoy with their boxed wine.
That's right.
The MMQB Weekside Podcast is me, Jenny Vrentis, and Connor Orr. We are produced by Shelby Royston. SI's executive producer of podcasts is Scott Brody. Ben Eagle is director of editorial projects and product. Mark Marivic is emeritus executive director of the MMQB. Keep up with our entire lineup of podcasts 5 days a week by subscribing to the MMQB NFL Podcast for free on Apple Podcasts. And while you're there, please do us a favor and leave a rating and review. It really does help other people find the show, which is also available on Spotify, radio.com, Stitcher, SI.com, and wherever else you listen to podcasts.